In our reading from the Gospel of John today, in John chapter 15, we read, "Henceforth I call you not servants, for the servant knows not what his Lord doth, but I have called you friends. For all things that I have heard from my Father I have made known unto you." Brother Dennis Gillett has an exhortation on this theme in his book, Solemn Moments of Remembrance. And I'll read it to you. "Henceforth I call you not servants, for the servant knoweth not what his Lord doeth, but I have called you friends. For all things that I have heard from my Father I have made known unto you." Let us begin by having another look at these well-known words from the Master to his disciples. Notice the words carefully. Quite evidently, a change is taking place in the relationship. It suggests that these men were passing into something deeper and closer. The king called them disciples at first, and surely a disciple, if he be true, is in fellowship with his Lord. Later on he called them apostles. An apostle is one sent forth in the name of another with his authority. If they went forth in his name and with his authority, then surely the fellowship is intensified. But now there's a change in the relationship, no longer servants, but friends. Let us not make a mistake here. It does not mean that in some sense they'd not been his friends before, nor does it mean that being friends they had ceased to be his disciples, and nor does it mean that they were no longer apostles. As a matter of fact, the greatest part of their apostleship was still future, and nor does it mean that they had ceased to be servants. Indeed, one of the greatest apostles later on loved to call himself the bondslave of Jesus Christ. All this being true, here it seems the king is distinctly and definitely making a change in his relationship with his disciples, apostles, servants. No longer. The very words mean a change is taking place, because if it is to be no longer, then something is in the process of alteration. No longer to be called slaves. Then the very character of the change is revealed in these words, "I have called you friends." At once we are taken on to a level which is different. Discipleship is one thing, it is essential and vital. Apostleship is one thing, it is central and authoritative. Servanthood is one thing, it is devoted and obedient. And all these relationships express an idea of fellowship. But then, "I have called you friends." And the sentence does not one whit diminish or negate any other of the relationships, but instead takes their values and makes them intimate, beautiful, and exciting. So here I draw a conclusion, that friendship is the highest form of fellowship. There are certain words used in the New Testament for the idea of fellowship, and I want to now remind you of them. Fellowship, contribution, distribution, communication, communion, partners, partakers, companions. But to advance the inquiry, I want to think of Acts chapter 4 and the picture of the infant church there presented. It tells us that in the days of the pure and uncorrupted faith, in the days when the disciples were impulsed by love and mastered by truth, that is, in the days when fellowship came to its finest realization, they had all things common. And the word which is translated common is the root word from which comes the word translated fellowship. If we pursue this idea and ask, what is fellowship with men? Then it is having all things common with them. If we pursue it even further and ask, what is fellowship with Christ? Then though it may sound startling, it is nevertheless valid. It is to have all things common with him. Now here is the interesting thing. If we go back to John 15, verse 15, we can notice the reason why the king was ceasing to call them servants and was now calling them his friends. "For all things that I have heard of my Father I have made known unto you." That is to say, he was with them in having all things common. he was sharing with them the things he had received, and because of this they became his friends. A slave must give unquestioning obedience to his master, blind obedience. He did nothing on his own initiative. Unable to possess, unable to elect, he acted out of fear, without understanding. But in the changed relationship, the bondage is changed. When he elects, he does it under the loving compulsion of his friend's choice. When he possesses, he shares the good gifts which come from his friend's bounty. When he acts to advance the very cause in which he has himself become a partner, having become a fellow labourer with God. The master principle of slavery is unquestioning obedience and blind submission, but it is not the master principle of friendship with the King. The friends of Jesus are submissive, but not unquestioning. The friends of Jesus are obedient, but not blindly so. He has told them all things, and they have asked him many things. When he had answered their doubts, and when he had illuminated their minds, and when he had shattered their blindness, then he said, "No longer do I call you servants, I have called you friends." Meaning, I have admitted you into the secret things, you are coming into the inner circle, you are my next of kin. I have told you all things, and we have all things common. So at last they gave him intelligent obedience and satisfied submission. Of course, in practice, it did not happen overnight, in a flash, like magic. What is this? A man is asking, "Lord, whither goest thou?" A man is asking, "Lord, why cannot I follow thee now?" A man is requesting, "Lord, show us the Father, and it's the vice of us." Are these men slaves? Yes, slaves getting ready to be friends, beginning to have all things common. And by that he made them his friends. And by that he made them his friends. The action was not on their part. Remember, ye have not chosen me, but I have chosen you. He took their doubts and made them the bastions of faith. He took their weakness and made it into the foundation of strength. And so, as they came more fully into the relationship, they were not slaves dragging themselves after him in misery, and thinking that in the very misery there was some virtue. No, never. You never find the Apostle Paul, for example, saying, "Brethren, this is a bad business, and I can offer you no amelioration. What cannot be cured, I'm afraid, will have to be endured." These men followed their friend gladly. Gladly they suffered in his cause, thinking themselves in some way privileged. They did it for the love of him, because they were his friends, seeking his interests as he was theirs, putting all they had at his disposal as he had put all he had at theirs, having all things common. They were not slaves, but friends, and yet in a sense, slaves as never before. I think I read your thoughts. It sounds attractive, but when you get down to the nitty-gritty, there is about it a touch of unreality. It's easy to say we are the friends of Jesus, but to believe in it as a practical thing is another matter. So we need now to think in another way about friendship. Many years ago, I came across a definition of friendship which I now want to communicate to you. I'm going to read it. It was written by a lady named Mrs. D.M. Craik, an authoress of the 19th century, who wrote several works. And this is taken from a work called A Life for a Life, and it's about friendship. Oh, the comfort, the inexpressible comfort of feeling safe with a person, having neither to weigh thoughts nor measure words, but pouring them all right out just as they are, chaff and grain together, certain that a faithful hand will take and sift them, keep what is worth keeping, and then with a breath of kindness blow the rest away. Now that makes friendship a very valuable thing. It's not every day that you have friends measured by that standard. With a true friend there's no need to wear a mask, no need for window dressing, no need to play the hypocrite, no need to make believe. You can be yourself without fear. You can feel safe. You can speak out of the honesty of your own heart, knowing that your friend will blow away the chaff and keep only the grain. If, when you get home tonight, you sit down quietly and make a list of friends like that, I do not think you will be late to bed. Neither are you likely to get writer's cramp. You see, with this kind of friendship, you can think aloud. You are true to yourself. Such as you are, so you are. And because of the affinity between you, so is your friend. There is no fear and no apprehension and no panic. And now here is the crucial point. I am proposing that it is not irreverent to put this measurement on your friendship with the Son of God. In Psalm 32, where the wonder and relief of pardon is being celebrated, David says, "Blessed is the man in whose spirit there is no guile." Guile is putting on a performance. Guile is being outwardly what we are not inwardly. Guile is pretense. Sometimes we practice it with God. David did, and his conscience gave him no rest. So here is the measurement. If there is some secret thing which ought to be acknowledged but is not, if there is some indulgence which ought to be repudiated but instead is nursed, if there is some room marked private from which the king is excluded, then your fellowship is not this kind of friendship. You do not have all things common. With a friend, you do not practice guile. With a friend, you can be honest and open. In the fellowship of friendship, you may confess your doubts, your fears, your griefs, your restlessness, perhaps how God has dealt with you and how he will take out the grain, and he will take out the grain, and with a breath of gentle understanding will blow the chaff away. We know not what we should pray for as we ought, but the Spirit maketh intercession for us with groanings which cannot be uttered. Remember, we are trying to understand how broken, failing men and women can have true friendship with the Son of God. It is possible, the Bible says so. Think of a sentence in Isaiah chapter 41 that ought to seal our conviction. "But thou, Israel, art my servant, Jacob, whom I have chosen, the seed of Abraham, my friend." Recall the nature of that friendship as it is revealed in Genesis. "Fear not, Abraham. Abraham, I am thy shield and thy exceeding great reward." And then the Lord said, "Shall I hide from Abraham that which I do?" Mark it well. Exactly the same principle is revealed in John chapter 15. "All things that I have received of my Father I have made known unto you." Compare that with, "Shall I hide from Abraham the thing which I do?" They had all things common, this great God and this faithful man. Abraham was called to fellowship with God, and as a result of the revelation, he came into the inner circle of God's friendship. The counterpart is in the invitation of the Master. "Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and you shall find rest unto your souls." We are exhorted by Paul not to be unequally yoked, but this yoking is unequal, yet permitted. In this yoking, the burden is cast upon him, and we are rested. It is a picture of two yoked together, the strong and the weak. And because of the strong one, the yoke is easy, and the burden is light for the weak. Bit by bit, his step becomes our step. So slowly there is created a kind of harmony betwixt the two. "All things I have heard from my Father, I have made known unto you." He speaks of having all things common. The same effort, the same purpose, the same direction. This is the highest and the sublimest law of life. This is friendship. So I make my submission again. The highest form of fellowship is friendship. The final consideration takes us back to these words. "You have not chosen me, but I have chosen you, and ordained you that you should go and bring forth fruit, and that your fruit should remain. And whatsoever you shall ask of the Father in my name, he may give it you." Notice a vital thing. They were not only the friends of Jesus, they were called to be the fruit-bearing friends of Jesus. The friendship was to produce definite and practical results. I mean, there's nothing more real than fruit. These men had seen their God in the man of Nazareth. In his sinlessness, they had seen the holiness of God. And in his compassion, they had seen the love of God. And living in the orbit of that revelation, they were to bring forth the fruit of holiness and compassion. All this is, of course, connected in a vital way to the word of the King at the beginning of this discourse. I am the true vine. He did not mean to imply that all other vines were false, but that all the others were but replicas patterned upon himself. Imagine it. God caused the vine to grow in the field as a figure of his own son, growing and bearing fruit, and then being crushed for the life of men. In a tree vine, the branch bears fruit, and does so by gaining from the vine the very life which enables it to be fruitful. In a way, the cluster of fruit is the branch's answer, the branch's response to the giving of the vine. He said, "I am the vine, ye are the branches." As he was, so his friends are called to be. Somehow, by his friends, the values of friendship are to be manifested in the world. They are the great master principles of the kingdom, truth and righteousness. Through the fellowship of those who are redeemed, the incorporation of those who are newborn, the ecclesia of Christ, the great master principles of the kingdom of God are to be revealed among men and proclaimed. Ye are a city set on a hill. Seeking men may come to it and find succour and sanctuary. Within its fellowship there is to be truth and compassion, warmth and love. Its citizens are to be impulsed by a master passion to reveal the person, the shining light, the Word made flesh. When you pass into the New Testament conception of fellowship and breathe in its rare and spacious atmosphere, then the trivialities which divide us and occupy us seem utterly paltry. The real issue is this. There is a person the world needs to see. If we are his fruit-bearing friends, then his abundance can be repeated in us. It may mean sacrificing our sensibilities and our refinements and our preferences. It may mean pocketing our pride and confessing that we have been wrong sometimes. It may mean going on when saner people would say, spare thyself. It may mean getting closer to polluted humanity, if by God's grace we may save somebody. It may mean having infinite patience with God's other children in their foibles and their failings. Remember, the fruit we bear is for them. If you mean business about this friendship, then there is one last thing to be said. The motivation, the driving force, it is fixed in one sentence written for us by the finger of God. Greater love hath no man than this, that the man lay down his life for his friends. I can say no more. I must leave it with you.